Do you want to react to any of today's news stories, or do you have your own issue to raise? The Sean Doherty Show phone lines are now open on 074-91-25000 or text 086-60-25000.
The Sean Doherty Show, brought to you by the Errigal Arts Festival. From 4th to the 23rd of July, 20 days of family fun, music, theatre, circus, visual arts and more.
And a very good morning to you. It's just turned 10 past 10 on this Monday morning. It's the 10th of July. Great to have your company on the Sean Doherty Show. Stay with us here till 1 o'clock and looking forward, as always, to your calls and to your comments. So get in touch with us on text 086 60 25000, and if you're phoning us today, 074 91 25000. That's the number. And if you're looking for us on Facebook, we're there at Sean Doherty Show. Now, it's great news for golfing fans, and it's great news for Donegal in general, because of course the 2018 Dubai Duty Free Irish Open is due to be staged in Ballyliffin in a show in Donegal. And that news of course was officially announced yesterday. There's been a huge welcome for it. It's going to mean an awful lot for Donegal. And if you want to text in your own thoughts and comments, feel free to do just that on the main station number. Now, of course, the Open was on over the weekend in Port Stewart, and there were tens of thousands at it, and there's no reason to think there wouldn't be a similar amount, and maybe more, even coming to Ballyliffin when it gets to stage the event in 2018, which is not too long away. And for those organising it, of course, I imagine that organisation has already begun. Now, we're going to be speaking to a few people in a moment who, of course, are delighted with the news. One of them is, of course, the manager of the course. And, of course, we've got Paul McGinley joining us as well later on with his own thoughts too. And the Minister, Joe McHugh, will be joining us. So whether you're a golf fan or you're not a golf fan, I'm sure you're going to be delighted with this news, and great news it is for Inishowen. Let's go to the General Manager of Ballyliffin Golf Club, John Farron. He's on the line. Morning, John.
Morning, Sean.
Well, you've had a very busy time of it, I'm sure, doing interviews over the last 24 hours, and you're able now to speak freely about this very, very exciting news for Ballyliffin, John.
Yeah, we're absolutely delighted, Sean. It's going to be a massive event for, obviously, for Ballyliffin, but for Donegal, Derry, and the wider northwest area. This is, you know, one of the biggest things that can come to town. You're talking about going into 420 to 450 million homes worldwide with the TV picture. So a huge opportunity for us and the region to showcase the natural beauty. And, you know, what for so long has been a hidden gem, we're hoping that this will shine the spotlight on us.
Yeah, because wherever you go and you speak to golfers, they inevitably mention Ballyliffin to you when they hear you from Donegal. They'll say, have you ever played Ballyliffin? I mean, it's the first question they'll ask. So you're quite right. I mean, people know about it, but it's been a secret in terms of the world knowing about it.
Oh, certainly. And, you know, this has been a long time in the making. Obviously, 20, 30, 40 years ago, this wouldn't have been feasible with the troubles in the north. So, you know, a lot of things have fallen into place. The tournament is elevated to a more substantial standard. Now it's one of the biggest golf tournaments in the world. The Rory Foundation backing it, and our association with Rory McIlroy helps us in that regard. So that brings the media interest, the sponsorship, and with that comes the players. And when you get a good quality field, as we've had this week in Port Stewart, That brings out the spectators, which is what that's what the sponsors and everyone involved in the tournament want. So we expect next year that Donegal and the North West will turn out in massive numbers to support the event, because it's a huge opportunity for the area to showcase itself internationally. And with next year being a Ryder Cup year, we fully expect the strength of the field to be even greater, with a lot of names being indicated as being potentially online for next year. It's going to be an even bigger event than what we're here.
Now, you and Rory McIlroy, the history, you go back a long way, don't you? Before he was the big star that he is today, I mean, he was playing Ballyliffin.
Yeah, we started bringing Rory here in 2004-05 as a youngster for our Scratch Cups, and in 2006 he opened the revamped Old Links with Nick Faldo. And we made him an honorary member, and shortly thereafter he turned professional, and you know, he's gone stratospheric since. So you know, we're delighted with our association with Rory, and he's been very influential in terms of the success of our bid, I have to say.
How did it come about, John? You mentioned there that Rory's been very helpful, but how does it happen? I mean, it doesn't happen easily, this kind of thing.
No. We've been knocking on the door now for almost 10 years, over 10 years, in fact. We did the Irish Seniors Open in 2008, which was to be a dipping in their toes in the water for the European Tour with us. And unfortunately, economic circumstances dictated that the Irish Open sort of fell off the radar in terms of sponsorship for a number of years. So it wasn't feasible for them to bring the event to Ballyliffin for a good number of years, but we've always been knocking at their door, and delighted now to have finally got the door open, and soon the world will know all about Donegal and Ballyliffin.
Absolutely. Let's go to Deputy Joe McHugh, the Government Chief Whip. Joe McHugh, good morning to you.
Good morning, Sean.
Well, first of all, let's get your reaction to this this great news for Donegal.
Yeah, look, it's brilliant news, and you know, just I think John has said it all there in terms of that it didn't just happen. There was a lot of door knocking, and you know, from my contact with John over the last 12 months, he's been letting me know what he's been doing, and there's contacts from New York right through the European Tour, and there's obviously a personal relationship there with Rory McIlroy, which was really, really important. But it's great news. It's great news for the Northwest. It's great news, obviously, for golf and the members of the Ballyliffin Golf Club, but it transcends more than that. Even I've seen my own neighbouring club down here, Rossapenna, retweeting the good news yesterday, and no doubt the likes of all the links courses from Morvo up to Port Salon and the other courses in between, they see this as a massive, massive boost for golf. But then the tourism people will be looking at this is, you know, going to get viewership of over 489 million people during the course of the 4-day event, and before that and afterwards, and that it's just going to be a great, great promotional opportunity for the Northwest. And I'm absolutely delighted for the club, delighted for John, for all the work that he's done. And I know he's going to be modest saying that it was a team effort, but I know the personal efforts that he put in himself and the personal contacts he made over a long, long period of time, and has come to fruition, and it's great.
John, what kind of organisation goes into this event now? Obviously, you have to think about hotels, you've got to think about the infrastructure, you've got to think about traffic, car parking, all of those headaches are on the way, are they?
Yeah, but they're all good headaches, John. we're delighted to have them. Yeah, the European Tour, it's basically a good-sized town coming into the town. So, you know, it's quite a travelling circus. The infrastructure and the build takes six or 7 weeks. But they have, you know, vast experiences. They're doing this week in, week out. And we've no doubt that working with their team, we'll showcase Donegal on the very highest level, and give everyone the opportunity to you know, shine a light on what we have up here.
Okay, Deputy Charlie McConlogue, good morning to you.
Good morning, Sean.
And obviously this is your neck of the woods. You're delighted with the news.
Yeah, absolutely delighted and very excited about it. And I think there's a great air of excitement right across the nation this morning as well, and over the weekend at the confirmation of this news. Obviously it had been in the offing for the last while, but not everyone would have been aware of it. So I think the local public are very much looking forward to it already. I suppose just... Well, I'd like to commend the tremendous work of Ballyliffin Golf Club in achieving this, particularly John on the phone there, who has been pushing this for many years now, and has finally managed to deliver on it for the club captain Brian Orsey and the secretary Oliver, and indeed for all on the committee who made this happen. I just think that what it does show, Sean, is that when there is a vision and the hard work applied, what is achievable and what can be delivered. And yeah. In terms of the county, I think the Irish Open coming to Ballyliffin is historic in terms of its scale, and will be a tremendous boost, not just for Inishowen, but the county as a whole, and indeed the wider northwest, as John pointed out in his remarks earlier as well.
Yeah, John, it's hard to... I mean, there aren't many sports where you get the chance to capture the county in the way that this will, in terms of the beauty of that particular area of this county and how it's going to be communicated around the world. That's the good thing about golf. I mean, you're looking at the area on camera, and there's comments going on all the time about the area, and hopefully we'll have nice weather for it, but if we don't, it'll still look well.
Yeah, you know, obviously golf is a very visual sport in terms of the telecast. We actually visited with the European Tour Productions van a number of times over the weekend, and it's very, very impressive what they can do, and they showed in some of the drone pictures we have of Ballyliffin during the course of the day yesterday after the announcement. So, you know, it's a they do make an effort to showcase the entire area. This is not all about golf, and it's a bigger story than just golf. And this is €100 million in the week of the event alone, but the long-term spin-off and repercussions are, you know, vast multiples of that figure, and I've no doubt that Donegal and the North West, including Derry, will benefit greatly from this, and will seize the day in terms of, you know, leaving no stone unturned in putting the region on the map finally.
Yeah, indeed. And Deputy Charlie McConnell, obviously Derry is going to benefit, and Minister and Joe McHugh, the area around Derry and is naturally going to benefit from this, and hotels and B&Bs and all of that.
Yes, I mean, I think Derry, Letterkenny, Inishowen, the wider county, indeed the northwest, even the areas where the Port Stewart, Port Rush, have no doubt, and with the Foyle ferry being up and running next summer again, the north coast is obviously closer than ever to Inishowen. But I do think, I mean, John and all his team and everyone at the club have put in a massive effort to deliver this, and a lot of the preparatory work is in place, and with a mountain of work still to do, but I suppose the point I'd like to make too is that it's going to take a big effort by everyone in the community as well to support the club now in their work over the next year to make this a massive success, and I've no doubt the local community will do that and work closely with the club to give it all the support that they need, and certainly I know everyone else will do the same too, and I think certainly the next 12 months can be very exciting, and as you pointed out just there now as well, I think going forward too in terms of showcasing Donegal, showcasing what the county has to offer.
Okay.
I think it can have very positive effects into the future after the tournament as well.
Well, Deputy Charlie McConnell, thank you very much for joining us this morning. Obviously, welcoming that news and delighted with it. It's great news for the county. Ballyliffin is to host the 2018 Dubai Duty Free Irish Open, and joining us on the line now is the winning Ryder Cup captain from 2014, and he is of Donegal parentage, so he's going to be particularly pleased with this news, I'm sure. That's Paul McGinley. Paul, good morning.
Good morning, Sean. How are you?
I'm very well. Thanks for joining us, Paul. And first of all, can I ask you, what you know better than most, what will this mean for Donegal? And first of all, your reaction to this news.
Well, you know, as a at least 50% Donegal man, I'm absolutely thrilled that it's gone there. I think it's great for the county. It's not often that you get a lot of big events coming up to Donegal. You know, Gaelic football probably being the biggest thing you have up there, and now to have 100,000 people plus coming to the Irish Open next year, and the photographs and pictures and live TV pictures going all around the world. The Golf Channel will have a live studio there. I think it's just going to be great to promote and project Donegal, that I believe to be the prettiest county in Ireland. And I think the ripple effects and the ripple benefits are going to be replicating for a number of years throughout Donegal, hopefully in an economic sense.
And Paul, you're familiar with the course. Just describe it, and I mean, people have been complimenting it over the weekend, obviously, those who've been welcoming this news. But as a golfer, how would you describe the course?
Oh, it's certainly a golf course very worthy of the of an Irish Open, and I think it's a brilliant design. I played it a number of years ago, and I really enjoyed it. I think it'll be a real test for the best players in the world. Like all Lynx golf courses, it needs the wind to blow. We didn't really have the wind last week in Port Stewart, and hence we have a record score because the players are so good nowadays. So hopefully bright and breezy, I keep saying, when we come to Lynx weather, is what we need up there, and hopefully that wind will blow. That's the biggest thing, because Lynx golf courses are made for the wind, and hopefully that's what we're going to be blessed with next year.
And what do these golfers expect, Paul, the golfers at that level, when they come to a place like Donegal, or anywhere for that matter?
Well, they expect a great golf course, which they're going to get. That's the first requirement. People talk about accommodation and all that kind of stuff, but there's a lot of places that we play. You know, we go to China and Korea and places like that, and often we'd sit in the bus for an hour and 15 between a hotel and a golf course every day. So all this talk about, oh, you need to have so many hotels within 5 miles and all that, is not really true when it comes to other tournaments on the European Tour. So accommodation, even as far as Derry, is going to be perfect and very acceptable. I think the biggest thing is the golf course. And then number two is the atmosphere that's going to be created. And there's no doubt it's going to be, I expect it to be a sellout crowd of over 100,000 people. And I think it's going to be, I think it's just great. It's just brilliant that Donegal, this little small county in the northwest of Ireland, is going to host such a major event.
And did you expect that it would happen one day soon, Paul?
Well, when Rory took over the Irish Open, what was it now, 3 or 4 or 5 years ago, his idea was to keep it on Lynx golf courses and to move it around the country. And I think the people up in Ballyliffin deserve a huge amount of credit for keeping the conversation going with Rory's team. I think it just shows you again the value of relationships. You know, when Rory was a junior, he used to play up there in the Scratch Cups. He was very much welcomed, and him and his dad, and I think that relationship has borne through to him now being a big superstar of the game, and never forgetting the people that looked after him. And I think Ballyliffin were very much in that mould, and were very good at harnessing and working and developing that relationship with Rory, kept themselves in the conversation with Rory about being a potential venue, and the fact that they've got a great golf course obviously is a huge part of it. And I think Rory is rewarding Ballyliffin for all the good times he had up there to say, yeah, we'll give you a go at hosting the Irish Open, and very well deserved it is.
Yeah, and John Farron, the general manager, is on the line from Ballyliffin Golf Club. John, obviously that warm relationship paying off.
Oh, certainly, and you know, we'd like to think we claim a lot more than 50% of Paul McGinley, and Paul shouldn't undervalue the great efforts and support he's given to our bid, and we'd love to acknowledge that publicly. But yeah, the relationship with Rory is important, but there's a lot of people we need to thank, and you know, people like Paul, Graham McDowell, Rory, have all, you know, been willing to endorse Ballyliffin's bid with the European Tour, and that's very, very, very important.
So, Paul, you're obviously crucial to this as well. Your support has been crucial.
Well, yeah, I mean, I'm on the board of the European Tour now, Sean. So there's a big change going on in the European Tour, as everybody knows. New change of executive, and there's a lot of money now come into the European Tour in the last 12 months. The Rolex Series, the amount of money they're playing for, and venues is a big part of our conversation. And of course, any time Ballyliffin came up at board meetings, you know, my connections with Donegal, it was a full endorsement that I was giving. And but ultimately, you know, Rory had the big call. You know, the Irish Open wouldn't be where it is without his support. He is one of the superstars of the game, if not the number one superstar in the game, and he's got a lot of leverage within the tour. And when Ballyliffin was put on the radar, it was put there by Rory, and I was very happy to endorse to endorse it as a great golf course that would be very worthy of hosting an Irish Open.
Now, you were obviously involved at the weekend there. I saw your parking bay signed out, took a picture of it as it happens with myself, but anyway, that's another story. But tell us about the game itself. Like Rory, for instance, he seemed to have so much pressure even before the game, because obviously he's got so much personal involvement in that competition too, before even playing.
Yeah, he does, Sean. And, you know, Rory's going into a second phase of his career now. You know, he's not the new kid on the block anymore. He's going into a more mature stage of his career. There's expectations on his shoulders now. He's probably the number one draw in golf. In fact, I'd say he is the number one draw in golf, including America. You go there, Rory draws more attention than anybody else. And sometimes you forget that as Irish people. So there's a lot of pressure on his shoulders. But it's part and parcel of being a superstar and being paid as much money as he is to represent the different companies that he does and lead the lifestyle that he does. And, you know, he's got to get his head around that, and he is getting his head around that. And he's going through a lull at the moment. And, you know, what we've seen from Rory throughout his career is that he's had ups and downs. You know, it's easy to look at Rory's career and think, oh, it's been a straight trajectory of upwards since he turned pro, but it hasn't. There's been a lot of ups and downs. And what we have seen from Rory is there's, you know, if there's a lull, there's always a bounce back. So I expect to see the bounce back. I don't know how quickly it will be before that will happen, but if history is proved right, there will be a bounce back from Rory. And you know, the sooner that happens, the better from our point of view, because you want to see him contending in the two major championships that are to play for in the next 5 weeks.
Okay, and just before we let you go, Paul, you're about to tee off yourself, are you?
Yeah, we're playing a pro-am in Luxustown Castle in Dublin today, which is it's a long story, but basically you've got the GUI who do a wonderful job, and all the amateurs play to a very high level under the GUI there, and then they get thrown into the professional game, and you know, that umbrella organisation and that kind of family unit that they're involved in the GUI is no longer applicable, and so what we're trying to create now is a kind of a new umbrella organisation that would look after those young guys when they do turn pro, so they leave the family environment of the Golf Union of Ireland and move into the professional game. And Des Smith has been put in place of that, and now we've got a lot of work to do to build some structures around Des to give him the support, and part of that is obviously financial, and today is a fundraiser to give him some funds to help and advise all these young pros as they turn pro and try to follow in the footsteps of, you know, the Rory McIlroys, for example, who are trailblazing around the world.
Well, Paul McGinley, thanks for taking the time to join us this morning.
Pleasure, Sean, and look at everything you do. I believe there's new horizons for you too, Sean, and I want to wish you the very best of luck. You'll be badly missed.
Well, thanks, Paul. Thanks for joining us. Appreciate it.
All right, Sean. Bye-bye.
Paul McGinley there. And let's just go to Joe McHugh again. Deputy McHugh, you're listening to Paul McGinley, one of the great golfers there, and obviously has been very crucial in terms of this particular announcement. So, all in all, a very good thing for Donegal.
Yeah, it's great, and it's good to hear Paul there and the positivity for the Northwest, and that's going to continue. But just a bit of a couple, I think Paul put the figures for 4 days of about 100,000 people coming. And for the figures for 2018, there's going to be €1 million. There is €1 million agreement with the government where €500,000 goes to Sports Ireland, another €500,000 goes to Falls Ireland. But I know there will be other capacity challenges at the local level, but we're very, very fortunate in the Northwest that we have Derry, Strabane Council and Donegal County Council working so closely together. And no doubt the likes of John Kelpie, the CEO, and our own Seamus Neely will be working very closely. And whatever infrastructural challenges there are between now and next July, I think they'll relish that opportunity. And certainly if there's other work that needs to be done or other funding streams that need to be availed of, no doubt we'll be working hard on a collective basis in the Northwest.
Deputy McHugh, thank you very much for joining us.
Thank you. Thanks, Sean.
And now, just back to the man of the moment, John Farren. John, just a few questions coming in about the infrastructure. I mean, it's quite challenging in terms of roads. Just a quick word on the roads. What's planned? Or is there anything you could say at the moment in terms of people accessing, getting in, getting out?
Well, not at this point. The tour have come in and obviously looked at the peninsula and the whole area. They will put a traffic management plan in place in conjunction with ourselves, the County Council and the Gardaí, and indeed the PSNI in Derry. There will be park and ride stations throughout the peninsula, I have no doubt. But as Debbie McHugh just said there, you know, nothing's insurmountable, and those challenges are there to be overcome, and they will be overcome by everyone involved. And we look forward to working with Seamus Neely and all the political representatives on both sides of the border in terms of getting things done that need to be done to make this, you know, a great event.
They have to get this one right. John, well done again, and thanks for joining us this morning.
Thank you, Sean.
That's the General Manager of Ballyliffin Golf Club, John Farron. And let's go to Christina McElhaney, who's Ballyliffin and Clonmany Tourism. And obviously, Christina, this is just wonderful news for you and your group.
It absolutely is, Sean. Given that Ballyliffin and Clonmany Tourism are just in this absolute infancy, we're a wee network of tourism businesses and facilities in that particular region that have got together just since January. And our whole purpose is around networking, supporting and promoting each other rather than operating as individual operators, you know, making connections and networks to each other. This news over the weekend, we'd been anticipating it in some way, you know, because you hear wee things and that. But in another way, we're absolutely unbelievably delighted. The work that Ballyliffin Golf Club and everyone else involved in putting this together and bringing it to this region, it's just an incredible boost for our region, and one that we're kind of thinking, oh my goodness, you know, this is really up the ante now. We really need to get organised for this. And I suppose one of our main aims will be that we put together, you know, a good all-round tourism experience for visitors. And there'll be lots of people, you know, that will be coming to the area that may not even go to see the golf, but they will be going to see, their partners and their friends will be, but they'll be in the area. And there's so many other things to do as well along with that. So it's really a promotion, an all-round promotion. We just can't believe that this has been secured for our area, and we are just absolutely over the moon with it.
Okay, well, it's like winning the lotto, really. Christina McElhaney, thanks for joining us this morning.
Thanks very much.
From Ballyliffin and Clonmany Tourism, we're back after these. Now, John Farron has done sterling work to get the Open to Ballyliffin, and he deserves a lot of credit. And all those good comments coming in saying congratulations to Ballyliffin, and well done. Okay, our lines are open for your calls and for your comments on 0749 125 000. Keep your calls and comments coming in to us. And remember, if you want to visit us at Facebook, we're there at Sean Doherty Show. I'm just going to read the headlines of the local papers to you. The Donegal People's Press today have got father and son lost in fishing tragedy. We'll be going to that story shortly. The bodies of a father and son were recovered from the water off Ballinbeg yesterday following an extensive air, sea and land search, and two drowned on fishing trip. The community in South Donegal in shock after the death of two men in a boating accident. I think we're being told now that they were from Lithuania. Harry Walsh is writing a story about the water supply, saying parts of Donegal will experience water rationing over the coming weeks if consumers do not heed calls to conserve water and minimise water usage as lake levels continue to fall. The stark warning has been issued by Irish Water amid growing concerns over water supply to the Milford, Kerry, Keele, Rathmullen and Remelton areas due to the ongoing dry weather conditions. So you wouldn't think it, would you? You'd think we get lots of rain, and it's been raining and raining yesterday and all of that, but still they talk about droughts to us. Now, as I just mentioned, there has been tragedy over the weekend on our waters. Derek Flanagan is Divisional Controller of Mallin Search and Rescue Region. And Derek Flanagan, good morning to you.
Good morning, Sean.
So, Derek, when did you first get the call that there was a problem?
Sean, on Sunday morning, the Gardaí called the Rescue Coordination Centre of Malhead, reporting that body may have been washed ashore. And 10 minutes later, initially after that call, then a local boat operator in Teeland, Paddy Bourne, a very experienced boat operator there, rang, and he actually mentioned that it was a separate call. Like, he mentioned that there was a car and a trailer, and he'd seen a boat with two persons going out to sea the previous day on Saturday, and that he was concerned because on Sunday morning he noticed that the boat seemed to not have returned, and the car and trailer were still sitting in a pier. So in that case then, Malin had started a major search and rescue mission for two people who no one had been recovered, and so we tasked the Kittybegs Coast Guard team, a rescue helicopter 118 from Sligo, the Armagh lifeboat, and Bundoran RNLI as well. So there was quite a lot of people out there at that stage and are getting ready to go to start searching for the second person.
And the second person was found fairly quickly, Derek.
Yeah, about an hour and 20 minutes after the initial call, the second body was spotted in the water by the rescue helicopter and was taken aboard then by the Bundoran RNLI and recovered to Teeling. And I'd like to express our condolences to the family of the people that were lost over the weekend.
And do we know more or any more about them other than these two individuals who sadly lost their lives were from Lithuania, we believe?
Yeah, I believe that, and from media reports and so on. But we have very little information in the RCC as relation to like who they were or where they're from. The media seems to be getting more information on that than we actually were. We're more concerned about the actual rescue mission or the recovery mission, and getting the job done, and then handing them over to the Gardaí, and then the Gardaí sort of look after the information from there. You know.
And Derek, what were the conditions like when these two men went to sea?
Well, actually, Sean, the conditions were quite good on Saturday. It was the wind conditions were about force 4 or 5, and the sea was sort of slight, and actually the wind was dropping away then all the time. But unfortunately, although that was the case for, you know, out to sea in close to the shore, very close to shore, there was quite a big swell breaking in the rocks. So although the sea can be relatively calm, as the swell moves in towards the shore, the shoreline shallows, and then you get a swell that breaks along the shore, and that can make conditions quite rough close to the shore.
And this vessel that they were in, Derek, was it suitable?
Yeah, well, it's hard to judge that given, you know, until I see the vessel itself, but it was a 5 metre rigid inflatable boat. They're quite a good sea capable boat most of the time. Again, depending on the age and the condition of the boat, I guess it's like having a car. You know, some cars, it depends how old it is or what the condition of it is, how much mileage is on it, that sort of stuff. So it's the same in a boat, you know, and the boat. The boat ended up washed up on the rocks. We found that about an hour after the search mission started yesterday, and the boat was washed up on the rocks as well. So it's hard to... we don't really understand what's happened yet, and I guess the Marine Casualty Investigation Board, they'll be the ones that will then go and investigate exactly what was possibly the cause of this incident.
Now, I know that you're always encouraging, Derek, people who go into the water, onto the water, to have life jackets, to have the proper radio equipment. I mean, from what you know so far, did these men have that?
Don't think they had all the necessary safety equipment from what we've seen or heard so far. It seems that one of the gentlemen was recovered by buoyancy aid, and the other one of them was recovered with no life jacket on. So it seems maybe that they weren't wearing the proper life jackets. Obviously, the concerning point there is that, you know, they weren't missed or reported overdue, or that they didn't have maybe a radio equipment aboard a boat to report that there was an incident or a problem. And so, like, our message, everybody that goes to sea, is always to make sure that you wear a life jacket, that you stay afloat and stay connected is our motto, and no life jacket, no excuse. We're constantly on to the public, the RNLI, the Coast Guard, Bordy Skiwara, the Sea Safety, Water Safety Ireland, the local county council water safety officers. We're constantly trying to get this message to the people out there, is that they need to wear a life jacket. It's like getting into a car. You wouldn't get into a car without putting on your your seatbelt or shouldn't, and most people do it just automatically now. It should be the same when you get into a boat. The first thing you should be reaching for is your life jacket.
Okay, and obviously we are hearing reports that there was a call to help these individuals in the last number of weeks. Do you know anything about that?
Well, I can't specifically say if it was these individuals, but there was a call, and we've had quite a number of calls in that area over the last number of months. It's not uncommon, and four weeks ago, I believe, 28th of May or so, we had a vessel that was broken down there, and it was towed in by kiddie bags. And again, the Coast Guard team that got on scene mentioned that the people on board were not wearing life jackets, although they had them on board the boat, and they asked them to put the life jackets on, and then they were towed in. But I can't say specifically if it was the same people or not. I don't know.
Okay. Derek, go ahead.
No, I just wanted to say that, just to warn people, and not to warn people, but to say, look, the sea is a great resource. Go out there, enjoy it, but please be safe. You know, let people know where you're coming from, where you're going, what time you expect to be back at, and wear a life jacket, and have a radio and a mobile phone with you as well, like, by all means.
Okay, now, just to clarify, as far as you understand it, I mean, there are some reports that this was a father and son, but we're being told now that that isn't the case. Is that your understanding, Derek?
Sean, to be honest, I don't know. Again, I don't know anything really about the casualties. All we were really interested in was the search and recovery mission.
Okay.
And search and rescue. And then it's really a matter for the Gardaí when we hand them over to them. We don't normally get follow-up reports on the casualties.
Okay, Derek, thanks for joining us. Thank you.
No problem, Sean. Okay.
That's the Divisional Controller with Malin Search and Rescue Region now. Councillor Niamh Kennedy's on the line. Good morning, Niamh.
Good morning, Sean. How are you?
I'm very well. It's a very sad day, obviously. Two lives lost.
Very, very sad. Very upsetting for everybody. You know, our sincere condolences go out to the families. It was an awful tragedy. You know, two men going out for a nice evening. Thinking that everything was grand, because the day that was in it was a beautiful day. It was really sunny. There was a bit of a breeze, but nothing major, you wouldn't have thought. And then whatever happened to them, they went round by Malinbeg, and whatever happened, we don't know at this stage. But they had left the pier at Teelin, as I said, the night before. I was actually in Teelin yesterday. There was a regatta on, and it was a miserable day. The weather wasn't great, and people were quite obviously very, very upset at what had happened. The news had just been coming through at that stage. I was going down for 2 o'clock, and it was only then that I'd found out that a body had been recovered and taken onto the pier in Teelin. At around, I think it was around 12 o'clock. And at that stage, their car and their boat trailer was obviously still on the pier, which is very upsetting, you know, very upsetting for everybody, and a scene that nobody wants to see. Speaking to some of the locals then, you know, they keep saying, you know, you need to speak to people that come here on holidays, needs to talk to the locals to understand where the areas are that are dangerous, and you shouldn't fish in certain areas. Local knowledge is so, so important, and it's not hard to ask someone, you know, where's a good place to go to fish.
This is Councillor Niamh Kennedy, and Brendan Burns on the line, chairperson of Glencolumbkill Parish Council. And Brendan, hello and good morning to you.
Good morning, Sean.
Now, you were at the scene yesterday too. What can you tell us?
Well, it's a tragedy, and on behalf of the community, I want to extend the sympathies of the community of Glencolumbkill to the families of the deceased. It's very sad. There's no two ways about it. The two lives have been lost needlessly. If they had the proper equipment with them, if they had taken the advice from the locals, this could have been avoided.
Now, you're saying if they'd taken the advice from the locals, had they been advised? I mean, we are hearing reports that they'd already been rescued a few weeks ago. Is that true?
Well, based on local knowledge, we would confirm that to be the case, that these two individuals got into difficulty on two previous occasions.
Two previous occasions?
Yes. 4 weeks ago, as confirmed by the Coast Guard, there was an incident off the Sleeve League Peninsula where a boat got into difficulty, and then as late as 10 days ago there was a similar incident off, I think, Kilcar, between Kilcar and Teelin. So there has been reoccurring events. I suppose what we're talking about here is two individuals that perhaps like to be on the sea but did not have the knowledge, and more than that, didn't have the proper equipment. And when you're on the sea, there is no room for error. The sea is merciless when you are caught. And this is what has happened. We have a situation where they didn't have the proper life-saving equipment, they didn't have proper radio equipment, and to be fair, to the area that they were fishing off, they certainly didn't have the right boat either.
And Brendan, do you know the individuals, these tragic victims?
I didn't know them personally. We, of course, knew of them in the sense of the reoccurring incidents we had in relation to the rescue of them. I think the Irish Independent has named them this morning. They're not father and son. They were two friends. I think one was a native of Mayo. The other was living in Longford. Both are Eastern European. It's not clear if they're Polish or Lithuanian. But they're from that general area, but one resided in Mayo and the other resided in Longford.
So, Councillor Kennedy, I mean, have you any more details other than those that we've heard?
None other than that, again, what Brendan had said, a number of weeks ago, the Coast Guard were called to that group as well. And unfortunately, one of the issues that, from talking to the Coast Guard yesterday, and it's something that's very, very serious that I actually wasn't aware of. When the Coast Guard go out to somebody that's in difficulty at sea and are not wearing their life jackets, or they may not have life jackets with them, the Coast Guard are obliged to take them ashore. They have to take them ashore and put life jackets on them and take them in. But if they refuse to go in, the Coast Guard has to remain with them. And that puts somebody else into jeopardy then, say, if there's another problem somewhere else in the bay. So it's, you know, people really, really need to wear their life jackets above all else. And obviously proper communication, VHF and all of that needs to be on board. And really and truly, you know, you don't need to be going out on a little dinghy that is not suitable for open waters and rough sea. You know, it really, we need to be very, very careful what we're buying. You know, locally, if we're, you know, something that fits a swimming pool does not fit in the bay, and we have to be very, very cautious of what we use when we go to sea.
Okay, now Derek Flanagan wouldn't have quite described it as a dinghy, but I mean, what were we talking about here, Brendan?
We were talking about a rigid inflatable boat, which is a glorified dinghy, to be fair, and I'm not a seafarer, but it's certainly no vessel to go out into the depths of the wild Atlantic. And bear in mind that they were off Rachlin O'Byrne Island and off Teeling, and that's the same area which two trawlers were lost in the 70s, the Evelyn Marie and the Carriguna. So you're dealing with very powerful waters, and certainly if you're going into that, you wouldn't trust your life with a rigid inflatable. You would be better prepared. But you see, what we're dealing with here is people that are not from the area, people that weren't, by and large, not taking local direction, nor paying heed to previous dangers that they got themselves into, but yet they were still insisting on going to sea. There was a degree of recklessness here.
Well, it's very sad, and God rest them, and then two families in deep mourning today, Brendan.
It's very sad, and that's not taken from the fact that this is extremely sad, but there was a degree of how this could have been avoided. And going back to the point, the sea is merciless.
Yeah.
The sea is all-powerful and is not to be toyed with.
No. Indeed. Brendan, thank you very much for joining us. And Councillor Niamh Kennedy, thank you too.
Thanks, Sean.
Councillor Niamh Kennedy joining us there. And before that, Derek Flanagan, the Divisional Controller of the Malin Search and Rescue Region. It's 5 to 11, about 3 minutes past 11 o'clock. There were some photographs doing the rounds on Facebook over the weekend of trees that had been snapped down, snapped in half, basically, and left lying. Councillor Albert Doherty, good morning to you. Good morning, Albert.
Good morning, Sean.
What happened?
Someone passing through Slieneagh Lantia in Carndonagh couldn't pass the beautiful trees without stopping and doing damage to them.
How long have they been there?
I beg your pardon?
How long have they been there, the trees?
Oh, well, they're there probably in the last year or so with the excellent work of the Tidy Town Committee and their efforts to improve and the access ways to the town centre.
A similar thing happened in Letterkenny a number of years ago, actually, and somebody just decided to snap a few of the trees down, and just reminded me of that incident. They snapped, in this case, 14 trees.
That's correct. There's 13.
16 obviously snapped at their base where they had the support mechanism attached. Another one is also damaged. So yeah, there's 14 saplings just destroyed in an act of wanton vandalism.
And when was it noticed, Albert?
Well, early yesterday morning, just the phone began to hop and people were saying how what an awful scene was visible on the Mobile Road into Carndonagh as a result of the damage to the trees.
Now, we've been talking over the last number of days, and in fact, over the week, last week or so, about damage to monuments in Letterkenny, and people have been very upset about it. I don't know, is there something in the water at the moment?
Sean, I concur that in Carndonagh, you know, today and yesterday, there's a great depth of anger. And that anger contrasts with what your programme was chatting about today. The significance of what happened for an Inishowen in Ballyliffin is wonderful news. The weekend events in Mallon with the Argyll Arts, the Henry Girls, and Anya's promotion of going to Zambia, what a lovely PR of the Inishowen area. And yesterday then, in that picturesque area coming into the town from Mobile, just to see that, it contrasts, and it's upsetting, it's disappointing, and really we're appealing for anybody and everybody with any evidence, please bring it to the Gardaí. And I also said yesterday to your own station, you know, I would appeal to whoever was responsible, you know, come in and give your name and make amends for the damage that you've done to the town area.
Martin Robbins, Secretary of the Tidy Towns Committee. Martin, hello.
Hello, Sean. How are you?
I'm very well, Martin. So you actually, as an organisation, were responsible, were you, for these trees?
Yeah, we initially made representation to the council to have trees put in that area. And we worked along with the council to secure the trees and to get them planted, yeah.
And I mean, they're lovely, and they were only young, but they were significant enough in size, weren't they?
They were coming on beautifully, yeah. Probably up to about 12, 15 feet at the moment, and lovely leaves on them. So we were very pleased with how they were progressing, and the person we got them off as well is the local garden centre here. He was actually very pleased as well, because he would look after them for us and help us with them, yeah.
So when you saw the pictures first of the trees snapped down in half, what did you think?
I went out actually yesterday morning to see them. I was told very early on Sunday morning by another member of the committee that he had seen trees damaged. So I went out myself and I was, how do you describe it? Upset, annoyed, disappointed, angry, all of those things. You're doing work to try and enhance the appearance of the town, the entrance into the town, and you get setbacks like this. But the whole committee, we're meeting tonight, and we will decide what's going to happen then.
Now, an individual or individuals just decided to go down the road in the middle of the night, presumably, and coming from somewhere or going to somewhere, wherever they were doing, and just decided to tear them down. No mean feat. It wouldn't. I mean, you've got to drag them down and snap them, and it wouldn't have happened in a minute, would it?
No, they are quite strong at the moment, the trees. So whoever did it, it would take some force, all right. And I would imagine there would be more than one person involved. So for whatever reason, this person or persons decided, yeah, we don't like those trees. Or maybe they're annoyed with somebody. Maybe they think it's a bit of a laugh. For whatever reason, they did it. And like Councillor Albert Doherty said there, I would appeal to anybody who knows anything about it. It's apparently all over Facebook. I don't do Facebook myself, but apparently it's all over Facebook. And if somebody knows anything at all about what happened, could they contact the Gardaí? We'd be very keen that the Gardaí would get involved and apprehend the culprits.
Yeah, I presume they are involved. It's bound to have been reported.
Well, it's been reported, yeah. I talked to the Gardaí myself yesterday morning, and we have a local Gardaí here as well, and he's actually helps us on the Tidy Towns, so we've talked to him as well. No, the Gardaí are aware of it, and hopefully they will follow it up, and as I say, if anybody knows anything, I would urge them to come forward, either talk to any member of the committee or talk to the Gardaí, and hopefully we'll get these people apprehended.
Yeah, you'd hope maybe, perhaps CCTV, or maybe somebody driving past in a car. Somebody might have seen something.
Anybody who's seen anything at all, we have apparently CCTV at the co-op at one end of the off the approach road, and then further in towards the town we have CCTV cameras at Super Value. Hopefully there'll be something that might give us a clue as to what happened, and sorry, not what happened, but who did it.
Yeah, and that would be the hope. And
that would be the hope.
Albert's obviously calling for them to put their hands up and come clean, whether that, you never know, maybe they will.
Well, maybe some of them have a conscience.
Like, how would you describe, you know, the work that goes into this? The person that may have done is probably lying in their bed now anyway, but unconcerned. But if they happen to be listening, like, what goes into this whole operation before you have these beautiful trees situated where they are?
A lot of planning, a lot of applications to different organisations for funding, all that type of thing. Then, of course, the work that goes into preparing the ground, getting the holes dug. You have to hire in people to do all of that work. You have to maintain them. They have to be watered. It all takes time. And to get them to the state they're in at the present time, and hopefully in years to come, it's going to be a lovely avenue effect coming into the town from Moville. That's what we're hoping for, and it was coming on beautifully. But we'll put them back again, and we'll carry on.
Yeah, you'll have to put them back again at a cost, though.
Yeah, there will be a cost involved, and you're talking several hundred. And I have to acknowledge Albert's contribution as well. As a councillor, he has come forward and said that he will contribute towards the cost, so appreciate that.
So the trees will be back, but will they be as big, or do you have to put them in much smaller now?
No. I was talking to the garden centre person this morning, and we've looked at trees, and they're somewhat similar in size, and they'll go straight in, and hopefully you won't see any difference.
Okay, well, that's some light at the end of the tunnel anyway.
Yep.
All right, Martin, thanks for joining us.
No problem, Sean, thank you.
Secretary of the Tidy Towns Committee in Carn, and Councillor Albert Doherty, thank you very much.
Thank you, Sean. I think Martin said it well. It's a setback, but such is the energy in that Tidy Towns Committee that for next Saturday, I have no doubt that Shalina Shrantaway will be looking as good as ever.
That's good. Thank you.
Thank you, Sean.
That's Councillor Albert Doherty joining us on the line there. It is 12 minutes past 11 o'clock. And just a little reminder to you that if you have any holidaymakers here on the 1st of August, then you'd want to take them to this night because they'll love it. It's a summer concert. It's in the Mount Errigal Hotel. It's Highland Radio's Big Night Out with Robert Mazzell and the band, Philomena Begley, Johnny McAvoy, Susan McCann, Louise Morrissey and Mick Flavin. And your compere, Pio McCann. Now, the show tickets are on sale here at Highland Radio. They're also at the Mount Errigal Hotel, and you can purchase them online or at the local outlets too.
Text Sean now on 086 60 25000. Your voice, your station, Highland Radio.
Okay, welcome back, and here's Marie. Marie, hello to you.
Morning, Sean. How are you?
I'm very well. You had an unusual experience. Well, it's not that unusual.
That's, Sean, no, it's not unusual at all.
Unfortunately, it's not unusual, but it would be very upsetting to put it mildly. You were on holidays, were you, in Rosnaile?
Yeah, I was up in Rosnaile for holidays.
Where are you from?
I'm actually originally from Monaghan, but I live in Ardra.
Okay, so you were up having a break in Rosnaile.
Yeah.
Lovely spot. I was up there the other week. Beautiful beach.
Beautiful, yes. We've had a mobile up in Rosnaile for over 30 years, so I'm 38 now myself, so I've been going there a very long time.
Very good.
So it's not unusual to see the cars on the beach, you know, with the waters coming up and around it and people parking and stuff like that there. It's been happening these years, but I just happened to do a Facebook Live to my family, to go to my brothers. Oh, God, here it goes again. Nothing ever changes in Rosnaile. Like, people don't learn, or the advice has never been sunk in, excuse the pun. And so basically, I went for a walk in Rosnarla Beach about 10:30 in the morning time, and they were kind of using it as a car park because it was very busy weekend with the parade on and everything like that there. And then because it was such a good day, the extra traffic then on top of that was people from the local area coming on to use the beach and everything with their kids. And I thought to myself, now, do the people realise how far they've parked down and the tide's going to come back in? So went back for a walk later that evening.
So actually, you knew where the cars were situated. Yeah. These are going to be in trouble if they don't move.
Yeah. I knew at that stage in the morning time, I was like, oh my God, is this really going to happen today? So that was fine, and went for a walk that evening with my husband and friend Breda, and came back from the friary, and we were like, yep, here it goes again. And that's why I did the Facebook Live, to show my family, we're like, oh, here we go again. Like, so, but what you don't see in the video is the people around it helping, supporting, but the people weren't there that owned the car, so they weren't, and people were trying to remove the cars from the beach.
Well, there was more than one car, wasn't there?
There were six cars.
And what I saw from your clip was the waves lapping against...
Lapping, yes. And I stopped videoing because, Sean, there was a few people that did come back and they were very distressed, and it wouldn't have been fair of me to video them being distressed on the beach coming back to see your car lapping with waves, and trying... the man with the BMW was trying to get into his car and opening the car door with waves lashing in, and just the water was pouring out of it.
What was the reaction like of the people?
Now that man was very, very angry at the time, and he just basically came down from Sandhouse that direction, down the wee road, and walked straight towards his car in his shoes and his jeans and the whole works. And then there was another car there, and unfortunately it was a disability car, you know, wheelchair access car. And so that was the first car that the people... try to support and help to get out, because there was a person sitting there in a wheelchair, you know, distressed about wanting to get back into the car, and there was the water lapping up around the wheels and stuff like that there. So that was the first car that whoever the people were, just people on the beach trying to support and help the people that the cars were in the water. But so there's still good people out there. So
and
there is.
Did all the cars get removed on time?
By the time I had left, four cars were gone at that stage, and I just left at that stage. But the four cars had got out, but the water was up inside their cars, Sean.
Okay.
Yeah, so, you know.
I mean, I couldn't help thinking, watching your Facebook, I was wondering, well, had anybody thought to get a tractor or to get somebody down before the wave started to get in?
Yeah, the people weren't there that owned the cars. Obviously, they were away for walks or doing whatever they were doing. And there was people there with jeeps, you know, with trying to pull the cars. But because the cars were the handbrakes on, the brakes, you know yourself. But so it wasn't until the people start coming back and giving the keys that they started getting the cars out and stuff like that there. So by the time I'd left, there was four cars gone, but there were still two cars sitting, and I just kind of walked on at that stage. You kind of seen it all when you've seen it all throughout the years, sort of a thing. And I couldn't believe the video kind of went viral, because I just originally put it up for my family. Here it goes again, and now it's got over 150,000 views.
Yeah.
Kind of surreal.
And
so the
point is that it happens quite regularly. Is there any signage up to warn people?
Well, as I was saying there, we were chatting about it ourselves, and there was a little sign, a cardboard sign that I saw with a high tide, low tide wrote on it with a black marker. But in situations like that there, with the tourism coming towards Rosnarla and the Wild Atlantic Way, and with the marching on that weekend, you know, they should have realised that there's going to be extra traffic, cars parking, you know, the road was closed off in a certain section. There should have been somebody there directing, advising. You know, it was a busy weekend. So it was, but just once again, you know, Rosnarla gets a bad hit, but it's their own responsibilities too for their own cars, so.
Yeah, but obviously if they knew that that was potentially going to happen, they wouldn't do it. They probably think they're okay, safe enough.
Yeah.
But if there's no signage, that you think if there could even be, like, it's easy enough to put in temporary signage on a day that they know they're going to be very busy, and just say, do not park beyond this point, or something, I don't know.
Yeah. Well, they have now, in fairness, they have signs up in the soft areas, and they've closed off the soft areas this year. It was the first time that I've seen that. So that is up this year, as cars were getting stuck in the sand in certain sections of the beach. So they have that signage up there. But, you know, maybe there should have been somebody there in the morning time, you know, advising people not to park there, that there was a car park in the other section of Versnaula that they could park in. I know it was packed, but there was still places to park in it. I walked through it.
People were helping, places. As you say, that's a good thing. But were the people who arrived back, were they annoyed that they hadn't been advised, or were they just upset?
They were just upset, Sean. They just wanted their cars out of there. And, you know, it was more embarrassment than anything else, I would say. They were like, oh, that's what I kind of gathered from a few of them, that they were just more embarrassed that it actually happened to them, and they just wanted out of there. Like, so, but, yeah.
And how high, I mean, obviously you turned it off after a while, but how high did the water get in the vehicles?
Into
the engine?
Right into the car. Right into the car. Well, if your man opened his car door and the water came out of it.
Oh, dear. That's a mess.
Yeah, so I wouldn't know the technicalities of the cars or anything, but that's what I saw.
That's bad news.
So that is for some, but the cars did get moved, so.
Oh, well. Yeah. Listen, hopefully people will see that and learn and realise that it's... Yeah. It's always a potential. Thanks, Marie.
No bother, Sean. Take care.
Take care, Marie. They're joining us about the situation in Rosnall over the weekend, where a number of vehicles got caught out, and it's quite shocking to watch when you see it actually happening, and you think, that could be my car. Anyway, 0749 125 000. You can text in on 086 60 25 000.
Right price.
You're the apple of my eye. To you I bared my soul, without a question why. I'll always do my very best to never make you cry. I'll care for you and love you true until the day I die. Hold on to your hat.
Derek Ryan, hold on to your hat. And Marie, hello to you.
Hi, Derek.
How are you?
I'm grand, thank you.
Now, you're on holidays. Where are you?
I'm actually in Benome Beach.
Oh, I know it well.
Far from the Nevada.
I know it well. I used to have a mobile home up there in that area. It's beautiful, isn't it?
You know, the signal's really bad. I can hardly hear you.
Okay, I'm just saying how beautiful it is up there.
Absolutely stunning. An amazing beach.
Yeah.
But anyhow, we were up at the Irish Open and we had planned to come to Benone and then travel from McGilligan to Greencastle on the ferry.
Yeah.
That was part of our trip, our plan. And we just arrived here today to find out that the ferry isn't running. It was supposed to be running from the 1st of July. And it's just very disappointing. So I just rang to check if, first of all, if it was running or if I'll make a mistake, and then it's actually not running. So I just think it's terrible. So many people from Donegal could have had an easier trip to Port Stewart to the Gulf, and as a result of the ferry not running, I'm sure they have to make a longer trip.
Well, ironically, we were talking about Ballyliffin getting the Irish Open for next year, and I'm told that it will be running. It will be running then. Now you might have a long wait, and you need it today. We have also been on to one of the authorities. It might have been Derry, and we are told that we can expect an announcement imminently on the ferry.
Oh, well, that's good news.
But not much good news. Were you up at the Gulf, did you say?
Yes, I was up at the Gulf.
Yeah, so was I. What did you think?
Well, we were there beginning on the Saturday. We had tickets.
Yeah.
Really lovely experience, I have to say. Really, really lovely to be there. Now, I'm not a golfer myself, but it was just nice. We got tickets from someone who wasn't going, so we grabbed them with both hands.
And they were, like, rolled up. It's interesting to hear you say, as a non-golfer, you still enjoyed it, because there was plenty happening, and there was the big screen up there, and there was all the different marquees, so you still found it enjoyable.
There was a great buzz and a great atmosphere, and yes, an awful lot to do. So in the evenings, then there was music coming on, and so yeah, just a nice atmosphere. I'm very well run event, I have to say.
Yeah, there was a big kind of, like, looked like the Guinness gig rig, but it wasn't the Guinness gig rig. A massive big stage there as well, so there was obviously entertainment on that too. And then there was other things for people to go into, other marquees and different things. So, where are you from originally?
I'm from Netherjerry.
Okay, so will you be heading to Ballyliffin if you get a couple of tickets?
Oh, definitely, without a shadow of a doubt.
Will you be taking up golf?
I might.
Did it get you interested?
Yes, actually. It did. When I was down here, I thought this is something that I'd really like to do and you know, try my hand up.
Did you follow anybody?
No. My partner was watching all the various people, but no. I think once Rory was put out, there was he's the star of the show. I kind of lost interest then. But no, he, my partner was watching. That was good interest.
That's very interesting, because when I arrived, he just, I was there 2 days, but when I arrived, he had been put out, or had obviously not reached the point that he should have and hoped to, and the cot, and he, the crowds were pouring out when I was arriving. You'd think it had finished, but there was still a good crowd in there, but that, it obviously had a big impact.
Big impact, yeah.
But anyway, listen.
Yeah, and I was just ringing to wine.
What did you do while your partner was going around following the golf then?
Oh, I was following the mapping.
Did you know what was happening?
Yes, there was very good information on the leaderboard. I think the weather just was amazing, and it just made it lovely to mill about and stroll and watch people and, just soak up some of the atmosphere more than anything.
When you got a bit fit on the way too, I imagine.
I love walking anyhow, so I was able to. There's a fair sign about golf. What do you call the field? Yeah. I'm embarrassed.
The course.
Now.
The course.
Of course, thank
that's
you.
Okay. I only learned about it in recent years. And going up and down, there's quite a lot of up and downing for you, walking up the hills and down the hills. And
yeah, but the course is so well maintained.
Yeah.
Very well signposted. And I just thought, went into one or two wee bars that evening, and it was lovely. Atmosphere was great, and just really nice experience now.
And
so I'm looking forward to Ballyliffin.
Yeah, and then you headed today down to, did you go down to the ferry then?
No, we're just here in Benone, and the person on the caravan side said that he was due to start on the 1st of July, but because of some financial wrangling that's gone on between one jurisdiction and the other, that so far hasn't come to pass. And he said the information they have at the camp, and that it's sometime in July, but sure, you know, this is a holiday season and people could be travelling from north to south.
Oh, they missed a big one there.
Yeah, no.
They missed a big one. I mean, of all the times for it to be off, like, imagine when the golf was on. But anyway, so we'll not let it happen next year.
No, definitely not.
Anyway.
Because I think the British Open is in Fort Rush next year, as far as I know.
Right.
Or maybe it's the year after. But anyway, they really do need to be getting Kerry up and running.
Yeah, it's a great set. I've been on it. Have you been on it?
No, I haven't been on this one at all.
Oh, it's nice. It's a nice. It's lovely to be honest as well. I was on the two acts. I did the whole thing one time. You know, it was good.
And is it just recently that it stopped?
It's been off now for a while, to be honest. I know there's been a lot of pressure to try and get it back up and running again. But anyway, we who did we contact? Was it Derry we contacted this morning? When we got your call, and we understand that there's. There's going to be an announcement, maybe even today.
Oh, wouldn't it be nice if it's on for us today? Just call us, get them running now.
No, I wouldn't hold your breath for today now, but anyway. All right, good to talk.
All right.
Safe journey.
Thank you, bye. Hi,
that's Marie there. She's in Benowen at the moment. It's a nice spot if ever you get the chance to go down there. I'll head on then to the causeway if you want after that. Anyway, we're back after these. And you're very welcome back to the programme. Margaret and Jerry Geeran. I know the names. Very familiar to me over the years. They've been coming to Ireland for their holidays for many years, and apparently they'll arrive in Derry tomorrow morning, and then it's off to glorious Fannad. So I don't know if I'll ever get to mention you again on Highland, but there you go. Margaret and Jerry Geeran. It's been a pleasure mentioning your names, and I know you always send in a request when you're leaving to say what a lovely time you had. You may as well move here because you love it that much. But anyway, good to hear from you again today. Now, Gabriel, hello to you and good morning.
Hello, Sean, how you doing?
Not too bad. Now, what's happening in Newton Cunningham?
In Newton Cunningham, I work in Derry. I'm passing in Inverness Road every day, and I just noticed about 3 weeks ago now, I thought I saw a plant of hogweed hanging out over the side of the road at a place called Tony Havoc, which is just the far side of Newton Cunningham.
Yeah.
And then I thought, no, it couldn't be. I haven't seen hogweed in, it could be 30 years.
It's giant hogweed, they call it, don't they?
Giant hogweed.
Yeah.
And it's not like, I know there's an issue with the other invasive plants, but hogweed is very dangerous for anybody that touches it. It causes a very severe burn. I'm not raising a red flag of it. Something that's mild, it gives a very severe burn, and it could take 7 years for the burn to heal. And the person who suffers from the burn could be photosensitive to sunlight for the duration of that time.
Really?
Now, it's not something that would have been ever let go, you know, but I'd say the council on the pressure this time of the year, you know, people on holidays and all that, but it's at a critical time now. Why I thought we'd get the thing going on, you know, had a bit put into the public domain, is that it's at seeding point now.
Right. So it could spread.
Yes, there's seven or eight plants hanging out over the, in down the bank, and there's two of the plants hanging out over the lane, over the road, the main road, on either side, one on either side. People out there, watch, make sure their kids are not, it's very attractive to look at it, you've been trying to reach for it.
Okay, I'm used to seeing this, my old favourite, I'm used to seeing the signs, they particularly put them up last year about the Japanese knotweed.
And knotweed,
that's a problem knotweed. In that area too.
Yes, knotweed and trousy, it is. And it's the reason for why it is in those areas is they're the main roads. And seed are carried, although the knotweed is not seeding, there's no problem with seeding of it, it's carried in fragments. And it won't. Knotweed is very intrusive, so it has to be dealt with, but it's not harmful to touch. It just takes over ground, and you won't get planned permission for properties. Are you still there, Sonia?
Yeah, you won't get
plan permission for it's becoming an issue now that if there's knotweed in a site,
you won't get planning permission for. That's become, I suppose, the economics of it then is forcing the council to deal with it, which is great, has to be got rid of. But
this weed that you've seen, Gabriel, just to be clear, is it definitely the giant hogweed that you've seen?
Is it definitely giant hogweed?
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Oh, right. And because I was reading about it as I was getting your call here,
yeah.
And not very nice stuff coming up. It's obviously a plant that was introduced. It's
yes.
a problem in Britain as well, and it's it can cause a very nasty burn.
Very severe burn. You're not even talking something that heals up. It can take, I believe, 7 years to heal up. It's a very, very nasty plant. And just as a side, Tony Habbock is where, and then I became tuned into a wee bit of about it. And yesterday I happened to be down with a friend of mine down at the bottom of the Ballylin Road in Remelton. So if anybody's out on that road, and if where it goes to the sea, there's a farmhouse on the left-hand side, an old farmhouse or a farmyard on the left-hand side. And just at the sea, a couple of feet off from that, there's one giant hogweed plant there. And I haven't seen this hogweed in 30-odd years.
Right.
I haven't seen it. That happened, and it's to say there's a big seed hen, and kids might be down there firing stones into the water. Although it seems it's well camouflaged, but still, kids, you know, if a ball went in or something and they happened to brush against it, they would be very severely burned.
Gosh.
So definitely giant hogweed, that's at Tony Habbock, and it's on either side of the road. There's one big plant, you're driving into Derry, you'll see it hanging over on the right hand side.
Okay.
And the rest of it has seeded from a plant on the back, on the bank. There's a bank on the other side of the road. And there's one now hanging out. There's about 7 or 8 plants there. It would be very dangerous. I would have thought that I would have been able to maybe get protective gear and take the seed heads off it, but I'd be afraid of it. I don't think I would have either the gear or the know-how to deal with it.
Are you telling me that there's a weed that is accessible to anyone who wants to go near it, or children in particular, and
yes.
that you would need specialist protection gear to deal with it?
Oh, absolutely. With hogweed, absolutely. You would not... You wouldn't go in... You wouldn't even go in with protective gear. I wouldn't go in... I'd be afraid, but I'm not raising a red flag about it. Hogweed is notorious. It's one of those notorious...
Well, you are raising a red flag, of course you are.
I am raising a red flag, yeah. I think it should be dealt with. I think, and that's why I put it into the public domain, just if the council, even if they just got out in the next few days, I know they're probably very busy because this is the time of the year when staff are looking to get on holidays and all that, and they're dealing with knotweed, a massive problem of knotweed in the country, but hogweed, just for the danger of kids, although it is, I must say, on the main roads now, kids don't walk a lot, but it's still there. And one man saw one of those plants, didn't know what it was, and he broke it with his, I think with a boot, it was broken, but he didn't touch it. But he didn't know what it was either. He didn't know what he would have been dealing with.
Okay.
So it's there anyway.
I'm just reading here that it's dangerous when brushed by human skin, and the recent
yes.
warm, humid weather means the conditions are perfect for it to thrive.
Yes.
You
yes.
need to stay away from it.
Yes.
Yeah,
so they're the only two places that I know where it is. I just happen to be maybe I'm more aware of it now because when I saw it, I hadn't seen it for so many years, I thought it was a thing of the past around here. But it's there at Tony Habbock. And there is one plant down at Ballylin. I think it's Ballylin where that little... The road goes down to the sea, but there's a farmhouse right down, or a farmyard on the left-hand side. The road goes into the farmyard on the left, and on the right-hand side, in the undergrowth there, there's one giant hogweed plant.
Well, there must be elsewhere too. This bit of information I'm reading from a news publication, it says that exposure, as you've said, can result in blisters, long-lasting scars, and if
yes.
it comes into contact with your eyes, blindness.
Yes.
And the blisters will form within 48 hours, and scars can
yes.
last for years.
7 years. They reckon your body tissue changes every 7 years.
And it can also cause, as you said, long-term sunlight sensitivity in people who touch it.
Yes. It is. I didn't phone you lately, no, just... It was something. I know that I would have been shouting about the other knotweed too. But I think this is one just for children. Jeez, if a child actually came in contact with that, you're talking about a long-term injury. You know, and I suppose it is part of the way I'm thinking that it's in the public domain now, so the council need to deal with it. And if they need me to show them where I don't have any trouble finding it at Tony Habbock,
anybody with any knowledge of plant life at all will see it straight away. But the one down, if somebody down in Ballylane, if you give them, if they want to get my number, to phone you, I'll show them where it is. But they're not to touch it. I won't touch it. It's something that I think that needs, it's seeded now. See, the big seed heads are on it now. But it's hanging over the side of the road.
Needs to be sealed off, really, doesn't it?
Well, it needs to be sorted. It absolutely needs to be sorted. I don't think there's a major problem with it. I was amazed yesterday when I saw the one on the side of the down at Ballylane. I thought I'm seeing things, because it was, you know, the way you send something's in your head. But the one at Tony Habbock is that it's really ready to take off as a major. The seeds, as every plant produces 25,000 seeds. I'm not sure there. I'm not saying even that. There mightn't be, but if they get a scatting at all and they spread along, some child, a plant's going to grow somewhere near where there's children playing football or something like that. They won't know what it is, they brush up against it and they'll be severely burned.
Terrible.
That's just.
Wow. And
so that's
it, how do you know so much about it? Are you a bit of a gardener yourself?
I'm not. I don't know why I know so much about it. I just would be aware of stuff. I would be aware of things, plants that are growing in the countryside, and I'd be aware of it. I'm very aware of the nuts. Knotweed, and that started 6 years ago. And I do say, I remember the county council told me that time it wasn't their responsibility, and the wildlife services told me that knotweed was just going to become part of the flora of Donegal. And I said I didn't think so. I think there's a bigger issue involved with that. And so it is. It's just, I just know. I don't know how I end up. I know I'll be watching trees growing and watching stuff like that. And I would be aware. I don't know why I became aware of hogweed. I remember hearing in years ago, along the canal there, that there was somebody got badly scorched with hogweed. I remember that, but that's, I'm talking about 30 or more than 30 years.
Do you know, you learn something every day, because I knew nothing about this. I've been learning about the Japanese knotweed, because we've talked about it so much over the last year or so, and the problems that it's causing. Let's go to Desi. Desi, hello to you.
Hi, Sean. How are you?
How are you? Well, Gabriel is highlighting what he says is a very dangerous, potentially very dangerous plant growing outside Newton Cunningham and also in Rimalton too.
It's the most dangerous plant in our hedgerows. What Gabriel may not know, even to... Now, the stalk of it would be as thick as your arm.
Yeah.
It's rising out of the... I know that particular area that he's talking about, a ton of havoc, and if you look down the gully... You'll see the plant is about 10 feet high there.
Yes.
Normally, it's heading for a canopy, if you understand what I'm saying. It's grown up through the other trees.
Uh-huh.
But the plant itself is not indigenous to Ireland. It was actually imported. It was actually purposely brought in.
Right.
Probably as well.
It was planted along streams to prevent the poaching by the big houses.
Is that right?
Mm. Yeah. And, of course, planted the same...
Like a barbed wire fence.
The seeds would fall over the river, and they had a built-in dispersal system there going as well, so hence the quick spread of it. But, Gabriel's right. It's a very dangerous plant. Now, should you actually snap the stalk in front of someone, even the spray will sting.
Mm.
And it led me to believe, and I've often talked this over, it's in very heavy flower now, and there's a lot of pollen about it. So you can imagine cycling past it, for example, and maybe inhaling the pollen of it.
Is that bad?
It cannot be good for you.
It's
a lethal plant. It's a very dangerous plant.
Gosh. And Gabriel just came across it and couldn't believe it.
Oh, it's fairly obvious. If you know what you're looking at, as often... The thing about the plant, Sean, it's also, if you see it as isn't, it's a very attractive-looking plant or a curious-looking plant, and that you are going to approach it.
It looks nice, yeah.
Yeah, it will sting you through your clothes.
Really?
Mm. Yeah.
And that's why you were saying about wearing the gear, Gabriel. You wouldn't even go in with protective gear.
I wouldn't chance it. I suppose somebody who's in the council in the environmental department will have the expertise to deal with it, you know?
Yeah. Well, we'll certainly be on to them, and we're going to give them your number, Gabriel. And,
not a bit about that.
And then you can identify.
And I think if the people, I'm hoping that I'm right at the Ballylane Road. If anybody down there wants me to show them where that plant is, I might try to get down there and find the house again. it was and just pointed out, because that is one in particular for kids.
But for everybody, please avoid. Don't be going down near it and messing or looking, because it's it sounds very dangerous. We wouldn't want people.
So once you know where the one is at Tony Havoc, you'll see it along the main stretch of the road at Newton Cunningham before you come to the building on the left hand side that recycles all the tyres.
Right, so just avoid
on
it.
On either
anyway.
Side, there are both sides of that road. There's kids on that road. Get them off it. Onto it, I would say that,
To be sorted, yeah. Desi, obviously, not a nice plant to have around.
Not a nice plant. I didn't know the origins of it. I didn't know it was brought in for that purpose, yeah.
So it was actually brought in to act as a
deterrent to poachers,
deterrent.
Imagine.
Yeah, deterrent, they say, the poachers. Now, if you were to get a burning from that there was no mistaking you would have gotten it. But it's, again, it's the...
So if you've got the burning, if you got burned with that, they'd know you were poaching at that time.
Yeah. For about 7 years afterwards.
Wow. That's amazing. That is amazing. And it is a problem in Britain as well, because I was reading, when I Googled it straight away, Gabriel, came up, that they're, you know, with the heat wave and that. And
yes. Well, it is. I would say it's thriving out there now. That man that Siobhan there was saying, but in full bloom, it's actually going to seed now, and it's seeded. The seed heads are foreign. So it's prime. It needs to be... At least the seeds need to be harvested off it as an immediate thing to destroy them, you know, just not let it spread any further than that. A lot of houses along there, and, you know, the road, the main roads disperse plants like that. The seeds get lifted up by tyres, and they go up the road, and they fall off maybe 10 miles up the road, and they get brushed into the side of the road, and that's how it works. And that's why knotweed is so prevalent on the main roads.
Is that why? I've often wondered why.
And we're lucky enough yet that the knotweed hasn't gone into the field much. As in Drumkeen. Drumkeen was, I don't know how Drumkeen people didn't go on a rampage about it. It went into fields and that there. But it's generally speaking, and it's handy enough, a lot of that stuff is on the main thoroughfares. That's where there's heavy traffic and the slipstream. That's what my understanding, I might be totally wrong, but that's where you generally speaking, you'll find knotweed on the roadside.
Okay, thanks for highlighting it, Gabriel. You've done some service, as the man says. Thank you, Desi.
Okay.
Thank you.
Not at all. You're welcome.
Thank you. Coming up to 5 to 12, and we are famous. And today, Donal wears I Saw Something Rotten on Broadway with a Rotten Tomato thrown at it.
Yes.
Did you?
I did. It was a musical called Something Rotten, obviously, which is based on Shakespeare. So, as if there's something rotten in the state of Denmark. So, it's a sort of a comedy pastiche on the works of Shakespeare, and it's got a sort of a pastiche on Hamlet. So, the show is called Something Rotten. It's on tour in the US at the moment. It hasn't reached the West End yet. I predict it will hit the West End at some point in the next year or so, and has the potential to be sort of the next Book of Mormon. I think it could be huge in the UK. It is wonderful.
Is it?
Absolutely superb.
Have you seen Book of Mormon?
I haven't seen it. I want to. I looked at Book of Mormon when we were in New York last year, and the tickets were just silly money. So, I mean, I looked and I thought they were looking for...
90 quid, 100
well,
quid.
They were looking for $250, and I thought, well, $250, well, it's a push, but just about then realised it was $250 each.
For a ticket?
Yes. But, I mean, Mormon at the moment, it's like Hamilton at the moment. I remember, like, my daughter is a huge fan of musicals as well, and she told us last year that she was screaming when I got home at lunchtime, and she screamed, I got tickets for Hamilton in London in March. And I said, I didn't know Hamilton was on in London in March. She said, no, not next March, March 2018. So, in 2016, she booked tickets for 2018 and was delighted to have got them. That's the way it works in the big shows.
That was the case with Wicked and that, you know, and Les Mis, of course, massive, still huge, great show. My favourite of all time, Les Mis, actually, Les Miserables. But Hamilton I haven't seen, but I've seen some of the clips of it. Does it go kind of all modern and yet it's old or something?
It is. It's an interesting... I've listened to the soundtrack and some of the soundtrack is absolutely amazing, I have to say. The soundtrack is really, really good. What it does is it uses a lot of hip-hop Lin-Manuel, oh, I can't remember the guy's name, Lin-Manuel, he's of Puerto Rican origin himself, mm. as was Hamilton. And he's done a really interesting job in taking this historic story and telling it through. There's shades of hip-hop and there's shades of rap and there's various sort of modern trends brought into it. And it tells the story in a very refreshing way. And the interesting thing was to listen to the soundtrack start to finish actually gave a real good sense of the story. So I haven't seen it, but I've heard it. And it's a really fascinating story.
Yeah, and I mean, it sounds like, you know, people could listen to that and say, well, that wouldn't be my cup of tea, you know, depending if you like hip-hop or whatever. But I thought that about the Miz when I first heard about it. I thought, oh, it sounds a bit boring, you know. Mm. That's initially what I thought. And I went to see it, it was like the best thing ever. So it's the greatest show in my view. Anyway, what's your favourite?
Well, I would say Something Rotten would be of the shows I've seen. I mean, okay, I saw some, as I say, I've seen it on Broadway. I've seen exactly one show on Broadway, and that was Something Rotten. So that's obviously up there. In terms of shows, I mean, I don't know. I would have to say overall, if I had to nail one favourite, I'd have to say Superstar.
That's great.
I'd have to say
Joseph's
Superstar.
Good too.
I would, yeah, but I would have to say if I had to name a favourite musical, Jesus Christ Superstar is it.
Yeah, well, I did Joseph when I was young, and if I ever wanted to be in anything, I thought it was Joseph. I still love Joseph. It was in Derry recently, wasn't it?
It was, yeah.
But Les Miserables. And I actually, when I was a young fella living in London, and I was doing acting then, you know, although I wasn't a superstar, I got a job. I wanted to get involved in the Miz, and I went to them, and they gave me a job. I wanted to work on the show, because I thought if I get in on the show, maybe they'll give me a job in the show. And I got the job backstage, working, helping, or dressing, or whatever the job was. And then I couldn't take it, because I came to Ireland eventually. Isn't that amazing?
That, the Irish trip worked reasonably well, though, in fairness.
It did okay, didn't it?
It did, yeah. It did.
It worked out all right.
It did.
There you are. Hey, life. And my last Monday, there you are. Ooh. Thanks, Donald. It's 6 minutes past 12 o'clock, 07491 25,000. And I keep saying this because I want to thank people who are sending me in texts and sending me in cards. And it's so much appreciated. I tell you that. I'm keeping them all. I'm going to get a box and I'm going to keep them all in a nice box. And then I'll take them out and have a cry looking at them all. So thank you for all your cards and thank you for all your lovely texts that you've been sending in over the last couple of weeks. Now, Dr. Joe Mulholland is joining us because it is the 37th annual McGill Summer School and Arts Week from July the 16th to July the 21st. And we always have a wee chat before the event to find out what's coming up. And Dr. Joe, good afternoon to you.
Good afternoon, Sean. And I'm delighted to be talking to you on this particular week because it's quite historic in your life, I think.
Yeah, it is indeed. It's a bit of a big week, all right.
This is a big week, and we'll hear more about it. It's a new era opening up.
Yeah. Well, Joe, let's talk about this big event. The theme of the McGill Summer School and Arts Week. Talk to us about it, Joe.
Well, it's about we're living in uncertain times, to say the least. When we look around us, when we look at the States, when we look at Britain and so on, and Europe as a whole. So it's called Global Turbulence and Uncertainty. Ireland and Europe must prepare for a new era. So what we're saying is that it's new territory for Ireland that's opening up. For the first time, we'll be on our own, as it were, from the United Kingdom. We'll be full members of the European Union, and we will have to think afresh about a lot of things. And of course, we have the whole thing of Brexit now in the immediate, and we don't know how these negotiations will go, but whatever happens, it's going to open up a lot of problems, political problems and socio-economic problems for this country. So we have a fair emphasis this year, not totally, but a fair emphasis, Sean, on Brexit and its fallout from our point of view, from the point of view of the border areas, from the point of view of the island as a whole. and then what kind of role we are going to play in Europe in order that we play a full role in it. But if I may just finish on that by saying that on the Monday we have Simon Coveney, the Minister for Foreign Affairs, addressing the conference on the Sunday night. But on the Monday we have a terrific session in the morning on Brexit called Brexit, the Certainties, the Uncertainties and the Unknown. And there's a lot of all those things. And that'll be followed by, we have four terrific experts on this, very au fait with Europe, including Pat Cox, former President of the European Parliament, and our own Marion Harkin, the MEP, and Alan Jukes, former leader of Fine Gael, and Dr. Brendan Halligan, who probably knows more about Brexit than any other single individual on this island. He's president of the Institute of International and European Affairs, which he founded. So that will be followed by an open forum, and we're very keen to get all interests in Donegal and in the Northwest as a whole into that, and to ask their questions or to make comments or whatever. So it should be a very good open session and information-giving session. And then in the afternoon, we have the European Commissioner, Sir Julian King, talking about security, because security has become a big issue for the European Union and a big issue for all of us. We've seen what has gone on in London and Manchester and Paris and God knows where, and this is an important topic, and that is also an open forum, open to the public, obviously.
Obviously every year is different, but I mean, this is real meaty stuff this year. I mean, you've talked about Europe there and Brexit, but another huge issue that you're going to be tackling is confidence in An Gardaí Síochána.
Absolutely, and it's another crucial issue to us, because without confidence and trust in our policing, there's not much else that is more important than that. And we have a very strong panel there that includes indeed the new Minister for Justice, Charlie Flanagan, but a very strong panel on that. On the need to get our act together, that the time for talking is over. We've talked enough about it at this stage, God knows.
So you've got some big hitters coming, of course, as always. I see Pat Rabbit's in there. I see Olivia O'Leary's in there. You've got Professor John Fitzgerald. You've got Brian Hayes. I mean, we could be here for a while going through this list. Roisin Shortall, Tony O'Brien, Dr. Rona Mahoney there, Master of the National Maternity Hospital's coming. You've got Dr. Conor Skehan, you've got John Moran, and you have Mary Rose Burke from the Dublin Chamber of Commerce. You've got Mary Lou MacDonald, the Vice President of Sinn Féin. You name it, they're there.
Yeah, we've also got, I hadn't got it confirmed until now, but on that session of looking at the North and North-South, and what is the we need a new relationship between North and South. We can't go on, whatever about United Ireland, we need to be working closer together across a whole lot of fronts, where it's already happening in some areas, in health, for example, between Donegal and Derry and so on. But it needs to be far more general and far more profound. So we have Mary Lou, we have two people from the North who are not political, who can talk from a sociological point of view and from a business point of view. David Gavigan, for example, is chair of the CBI, the Confederation of British Industry in the North. But what has been just confirmed to me is that Edwin Poots, the DUP minister, will be joining us. And as well as Joe McHugh, now government chief whip. So that's that'll be chaired by Dennis Bradley of Derry, well known in the northwest and indeed in Donegal and Derry particularly.
Yep.
So it's a strong session. And that morning we're talking about the effects of Brexit on the border areas. So we've brought in the north, and rightly so, in a big way on this year.
So it all kicks off this Sunday, Joe.
So it kicks off on Sunday, Sean, with as I say, the Minister for Foreign Affairs, Simon Coveney, who no doubt, I mean, Brexit is now his big responsibility, as well as the North, indeed, and he was present, obviously, at all of the talks there recently that didn't, on this occasion, lead to anything but will resume in the autumn. And then followed by, I think, a beautiful item, and that's the wonderful pianist from Mobile with the lovely name of Nadine Fiorentini, who is a fantastic pianist, won prizes all over the place, including at the Dublin International Piano Festival and so on. So that makes it a nice Sunday evening finale to that.
Okay, and for more information, as always, there's a website.
There's a website which updates the program as we go along, because of all the uncertainty and political things that were going on, I couldn't just nail down totally the program. But all the changes are on www.mcgillsummerschool.com. And as I say, Sean, this is a unique conference, and it's on people's doorsteps in Donegal, and anybody interested should really come along. It's a very democratic, open forum.
Okay, and every good wish with it. And Dr. Joe Mulholland, a pleasure. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you, Sean, and we'll be in touch with you. Take care.
Take care. Dr. Bye. Joe Mulholland there, who is director of McGill Summer School. We're back after these.
The Sean Doherty Show, brought to you by the Errigal Arts Festival, from 4th to the 23rd of July. Fun for all the family. More info on eaf.ie.
Haircut, you've come to the right place. No, I'm not cutting hair today. There you go, new job. No, Patrick O'Day's coming in and he's going to be giving some good advice. So anybody who needs to ask a question or wants to ask a question about their hair, you can give us a call now. Patrick, or any problems you have maybe at the moment with your hair, your scalp or whatever, give us a call and we'll put it to Patrick Gilday. So questions now, lines open. You can phone us on 074 91 25000. It's always busy, so get in early with your calls for Patrick Day. Now, Joseph McTaggart is joining us, the Chief Fire Officer with Donegal Fire Service. Joseph, hello and good afternoon to you.
Good afternoon, Sean. How are you doing?
I'm very good, Joseph. There was an incident at around 5 to 1 this morning. What happened?
That's correct, Sean. At around 5 to 1 this morning, a request for fire brigade assistance was received to a house fire at Woodthorpe, Newton Cunningham. Operational fire brigade cover in this section of the county is provided by Northern Ireland Fire and Rescue Service. So two appliances from Derry mobilised to the incident, and they were assisted by two appliances from Letterkenny. The incident involved a semi-detached two-storey house, and on arrival there was a fire in the kitchen of the house. The remainder of the house was badly smoke-clogged. A young girl had, prior to the arrival of the brigade, had been rescued from a first-floor bedroom window by neighbours using a ladder. And on the arrival of the brigade, there was a male sitting on the windowsill of what I understand was the same bedroom. And the neighbours were also endeavouring to rescue him. Because the ladder was too short, the fire brigade replaced that ladder with one of their own. And while in the process of attempting to rescue the man from the windowsill, he fell back into the building. Now, he fell back into the building before any physical contact was made with him. So, At that stage, firefighting and search and rescue teams wearing breathing apparatus had been committed to the house, and the man was removed from the house by one of the firefighting teams using breathing apparatus. On removal from the house, he was given first aid assistance by the fire brigade personnel prior to the arrival of the ambulance, and both the male and the young girl were both removed to hospital by ambulance. As I said earlier, Sean, the fire was in the kitchen of the building, and the kitchen suffered substantial fire damage, and the remainder of the house suffered a considerable amount of smoke damage.
And, I mean, this sounds like an extremely, well, scary and dangerous situation that these individuals were faced with last night. I believe it may have been a father and daughter.
Absolutely, Sean. I mean, we were very fortunate that both people were removed from the building, one thankfully by a neighbour and the other by the member of the brigade.
Now, you mentioned there, Joseph, that the young girl was rescued by a neighbour using a ladder. I'm just guessing here. Then the father was on the sill. Had the father handed the daughter over to the neighbour? Is that why she was able to be rescued by that ladder and he wasn't?
The answer to that, I can't give a definitive answer to that, Sean, because that had taken place before the arrival of the brigade, but the right. scenario you outlined would not be unlikely.
Yeah, so it's possible that he was able to hand her down, but then when it came to him, of course, the ladder wasn't long enough, so the fire service were needed. And in that situation, then he fell backwards into the house.
He fell, my understanding is, he fell while sitting on the ledge on the windowsill. He actually fell back into the room again. So it was very unfortunate that the brigade was there to remove him from the building.
Well, he could have fell forward, which could have been an even more serious situation. So,
equally so.
Yeah. And the fire service personnel went in with breathing apparatus and rescued him then from this bedroom.
That's correct, yes.
And obviously they were trapped at that stage because the smoke would have been coming up, and that's the most dangerous in these situations, isn't it? I mean, they could have been killed by the smoke alone. Had they alerted the fire service, or had it been a neighbour who'd noticed the fire?
My understanding is that the brigade was alerted by a neighbour, and they may have been their attention to the incident may have been drawn by the young girl.
Who was looking for help, clearly.
Who was looking for help, but I don't think there was any, from what I understand, and I stand corrected on this, it was more the screams of the young girl that drew the neighbour's attention.
This is an awful incident. Sounds very scary. So the neighbour, a hero here?
Well, certainly the neighbour did brilliant work.
And as for this gentleman and the father, we think it is a father and daughter. I mean, how are they now? Do we know?
Well, all I can say, Sean, is that they both were removed to hospital by ambulance. What the current medical condition is, I don't know.
And was this a fairly built-up area, Joseph? Were people out looking and watching and trying to help?
The house is in the housing estate in Newton Cunningham, so obviously other neighbours would have been aware of the incident as well.
Very scary. And how much damage has been caused now to the house?
My understanding, Sean, is that the kitchen suffered substantial fire damage and the remainder of the house would have suffered smoke damage.
Okay, and obviously...
Both people were very, very fortunate that they were able to get out of the house.
Thanks to the neighbour and the fire service arriving promptly. How quickly were the fire service there?
Well, the brigade came from Derry, Sean. The first attendance was there from Derry. So that would have been there within a relatively short period of time.
Yeah. So you have this arrangement, clearly, if it's Newton Cunningham, Derry responds to that incident, but you also responded from Letterkenny with two appliances as well.
That's correct. Well, obviously, what we want to be able to do is to provide the best operational fire cover to the people of County Donegal, and there are areas of County Donegal that are near brigades in Northern Ireland, specifically the area around Bridge End, Newton Cunningham, which is in the vicinity of the Derry area, and also in the vicinity of the Strabane area. So obviously if a brigade from Derry or from Strabane can reach areas in Donegal faster than a brigade from Donegal can, it makes good sense from a fire safe, from a safety perspective, to have those brigades mobilised as a first response.
And obviously in these situations, Joseph, it's difficult to comment this early on anyway, but how did the fire begin, do we know?
We don't know, Sean. As I indicated previously, the fire service is not an investigative service in this regard.
Okay, Joseph, good work carried out by yourselves and the Derry Fire Service, and obviously this neighbour as well, so hats off to him.
Absolutely, Sean. I think the brigades do the job as they always do and do it well, but I think it's also appropriate to acknowledge the help given by the neighbour.
Indeed. Joseph, thanks for joining us.
Thank you very much, Sean.
That's
bye-bye.
The Chief Fire Officer there with Donegal Fire Service, Joseph McTaggart, on that very serious incident in Newton Conyngham at about 5 to 1 this morning, where a man and a young girl had to be rescued from a house following a fire in the kitchen. Neighbours apparently noticed the child screaming, and fortunately, a neighbour was able to rescue the child before the fire service were able to rescue the father, but not before he fell backwards into the bedroom. He'd been sitting on the ledge waiting to be and hoping to be rescued. Scary, scary incident. Anyway, we're back just after these. Back and joining me in the studio to talk about your hair problems this afternoon is Patrick O'Day. We've got loads of questions. As soon as I mentioned you were coming on, so Patrick, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Sean.
And we're going to change mode and go straight into those questions. I was on holidays last month.
Mm-hmm.
It says, my hair became very dry and my blonde highlights went a wee bit orangey. What would Patrick recommend to sort it out?
Well, the sun was obviously working, so you had a good holiday beside your hair. Well, when we go into the warm environment, everybody's hair changes, whether you have colour or whether you don't have colour. It's a natural process. Our skin colour changes and our hair colour changes. So what's actually happened is the pigmentation of the colour in your hair has been removed and altered, and this can be softened down by just simply adding in a toner. Don't be worrying, it's not permanent. It can be removed, but going to your salon and then putting in a small toner will bring you back again to where you were at. The other thing as well is, it's lacking moisture, and with the blonde, I think you did mention that it was a bit dry there as well. It's really just the same as when you come back from the sun, you're nourishing your skin, so you have to nourish your hair also.
My young daughter has a clump of matted hair, and I'm trying to get it out without hurting her.
Okay, well, I'll go on what I'm visualising, what you're saying to me. And when we have young girls, what can happen is that their hair can become slightly tangled. If we don't address it, it becomes more tangled. And sometimes it can reach the point of where it's become over-tangled. But before we discuss that, if you work in the concept of separate all the hair from the area, round, try and comb all the hair together, take away the hair that isn't matted, move it to one side, put conditioner on with the hair wet, and with a wide comb, gently comb it, starting at the ends of the hair and working up to the roots. I've seen some people at home, what happens is, and they mean well, but what happens is they go at all the hair trying to comb out the matted area with the other area, and it just becomes lost and all mixed up more. If it has moved to the point of possibly where the hair is actually over matted, where it can't become out, where it's actually wefted together, then there is a possibility, and I don't mean to put any scare on you, but you may have to cut it. Take her to a salon. You don't have to get the young lady's hair done, the salon, any hairdresser throughout. Pop in, let them have a look at it, and they should be able to advise you on that.
Okay, because obviously it's sore business.
Well, you know, you've a couple of things can happen. Number one is kids are a wee bit more sensitive. You can really upset her, and she mightn't let you near her hair for another 2 years. So the idea is to go in gentle and make her feel comfortable and make it less stressful for her as possible.
Okay, I'm going to ask you a question about, people start scratching their heads now. Mm-hmm. Hair lice. Mm-hmm. A caller wants to know, any advice? Hair lice.
This is very, very simple. It's common, it's normal, and it's part of primarily kids growing up at school. And, you know, we're out of the season now, the school season, and we're starting again, and it will arise again. I have one very, very simple tip for hair lice, and it goes back to the old school. You get the product in the chemist that is designed for it, you apply it, and you gently start at the nape of the area with a very fine comb, and you comb them out. And it's as simple as that there, you remove them. But the products have become so far advanced now, what's actually happening is they're killing them off almost. So the amount of work that you had to do with combing has been reduced by 70%. Monitoring whenever they start back at school and addressing it as soon as possible is a key to moving forward with that.
Okay.
And adults get it as well.
I find that when I use anti-dandruff shampoos, they weigh my hair down. Mm-hmm. What would Patrick recommend?
Well, if you're using the anti-dandruff shampoo, what you have to do is you have to use a cleansing shampoo. What's happening is the anti-dandruff shampoo has some plastics in it, and it leaves residue in the hair. So there's two things that I'm going to advise you to do. When you think that you have rinsed the hair correctly, then rinse it again. And secondly, in between using anti-dandruff shampoo, what you do is use a general shampoo, which is just a deep cleanse, which will remove the build up without affecting what you're trying to do to the dry scalp.
Now, I don't swim, but I love to take the kids to the pool. My head is never under the water, but my hair just seems to be destroyed.
Well, you know, if your head's not under the water, obviously, you know, you're not making major contact with the chemicals that are in the pool for cleanliness purposes. But sometimes, with all good intentions, we think that we're not under the water, and I don't dispute what you're saying, but sometimes
the moisture gets in.
We can't avoid the moisture gets in, and just maybe just touching it with your hands. When you come out of the pool, this is a product that is designed. What happens is it lies on the outside of the hair, so when you're showering, dry shampoo the hair first, which means don't wet your hair first, put in the shampoo and wash it with the product before you wet the hair. This leaves the product more concentrated and is a great way of removing any chemicals that are designed in the swimming pool from a cleanliness purpose.
Okay. Now, some people would do that if they have kind of very, a lot of product in the hair, whatever. So they would wash it dry, use the shampoo without water first.
Use the shampoo.
It's not harmful.
Not at all. So as all it does is that when you use the water, you dilute the product's intensity. So the product is designed to work, so it will cause no damage whatsoever. What you will also find that people, if you are wearing a cap in the pool and it's a tight cap, sometimes people just scrunch in just a very, very light conditioner just to the ends of their hair, and that just works as a protector as well, but very minimum, the size of €1, scrunch it throughout the ends, and that's sufficient enough.
How can I get smoother and looser curls?
Smoother and looser curls. If you're coming from the point of view that your hair is straight and you're doing it from an evening point of view, then I just love the simplicity of just using a very simple wand where you wrap it around. You do it halfway down the hair rather than feel that you have to go to the root area. And what that will do for you is it will give you that carefree, and it almost touches on where hair is at the minute, where it's dressed to be undressed and it's dressed to be casual. Mm. So that's one option. If your hair is naturally curly, what you could actually do with that there is use an oil product, and what you do again is use a wand, and it will just polish it ever so slightly for you. And don't forget that when you're doing it, don't over focus on perfection, because what happens when we do that, we overdo it, whereas keep it casual, relaxed, wrap it around, and then just soften it out with your fingers, and that gives it that kind of beachy freeness, that I'm not trying too hard.
Okay, my hair is oily at the roots but dry at the ends and has no volume. The more I style it, the drier the ends get, but the more I condition, the roots get oilier.
That's a super one there. Okay,
is right, it?
Let's go. What we have here is, in simpler terms, you've more or less described and you know exactly what your issues are. I'm very oily at my scalp area, and I'm very dry on my ends area. So let's focus on one part first. Number one, as you say, is that it lacks... the first thing that you mentioned, sorry, that you said that it lacks volume. So if you go for a volume shampoo, and again, going back to doing a dry shampoo, which I mentioned earlier about the pool, rather than using your fingers when you're washing the hair, use the palms of your hands, and what you're doing is you are gently massaging with the palms of your hands throughout. That is breaking down the oils in a more concentrated way. Also, with using a volume shampoo, is you're not using something that is going to create limpness while cleansing it. You rinse out, rather than one shampoo, give it two. And then what you do then is when you come along and you use conditioner and moisture for the ends of the hair, don't put it in your hand and put it on the scalp. Put it in your hand and just apply, if you think, from the ends of the hair out. That's all it needs. So you're addressing both areas that you're discussing there. One is to create volume and remove the oil, first step. And the second step is to use something to add nourishment and moisture to the ends. You know, if you're using a hairdryer, it sounds as if you're just quickly blasting and away you go. If that's the case, naturally it's going to become dry in the ends, and if you have a wee bit of colour. So the rest of it, the oils are working well to condition it from the roots out, and just use the conditioner in the ends.
My thick, straight hair gets frizzy no matter what I do. I have never had it dyed, highlighted or relaxed. I shampoo and condition once a day, and I rarely use blow dryers or irons.
This is a natural texture of your hair, and it's as simple as that there. And what's happening, if long, heavy hair, what's happening is it sounds as if you're brushing the outside of it, and it's given that fluffiness, and then the light, when the light hits it, it's almost as if you see a fuzzy dryness. It's not that it's dry, it's just that that's a natural texture occurring that's creating. One wee product that you could use is use a very light spray oil, and just about 4 pumps, keep about 12 inches back, run your fingers through it, and that will soften down what you're seeing in that perimeter.
Okay, sounds good. I have colour-treated hair that is prone to breakage. How can I prevent both that and colour fading at the same time?
Well, if it's prone to breakage, then the colour product that you're using is too strong for your hair, and that's causing the breakage, primarily of your colour in the hair. So you need to look at something that is designed that will not cause this, and something which is more milder, so the breakage should not occur. If you are saying that you find that... What was the last bit, Sean? Sorry.
How can I prevent both that and colour fading at the same time?
Okay, so the chemical that is being used in the salon is a little bit over-aggressive, so maybe just have another consultation with your stylist moving forward and how you can use something more milder that's going to reduce the breakage. The colour fadage is coming from 2 points. Number one is because something that has been used in your hair is too aggressive, then you're not actually not getting the colour that you want, and it's just banging out even within a couple of days, because it's making your hair run too far down the road. You need to bring it back so it sustains and stays where it wants.
Okay, what's the best way to grow out a short pixie cut to shoulder length?
Well, I'm a great believer in you are where you are as a hairstyle, and anybody can have a style where they're at. So rather than over focusing on that length of that bob, which
where
is,
am I getting to?
Yes. Take it in 4 steps. So if you could imagine the pixie cut, let's think about 5 different looks between there and where you want to be. So within that period of time, what you can actually do is make it exciting. So rather than focusing on something that's going to take you 12 months, let's focus on something that's going to take you 6 to 8 weeks. So you have another look, and then you have that journey of, you might find that you might travel so far actually and say, no, do you know what, I'm going to stay here. So from the pixie to a longer layered short cut, then you're moving into a soft wispy bob, then if you keep a jaw length bob, and then let it come down further. So already you've got 5 looks there.
Okay, you can take a break from the hairdressing, and we'll take a break and be back with more questions after these. We'll talk about Patrick O'Day's with us from the Patrick O'Day Hairdressing Salon, and this call is asking about an itchy scalp, Patrick, which is probably not that uncommon. It can't stop scratching. I've tried different products, but nothing seems to be working. What would you suggest?
It sounds as if this lady or this gent have been tried a number of products. Mm. And the one thing that I do find for some of the guests is something with peppermint. And going again, speaking to your hairdresser, I find it difficult to get, I think something with a peppermint is designed from in-salon. So we do use products which contain it, and we find it works well, but there is...
Cools the head down.
Yes, other salons use products as well, and you can come in and have an in-house treatment right. That is designed for this coolness. And also what it does is it cleanses out the scalp. If it is a case that the itch is continuing, it does sound more to me that you're looking at maybe just consulting with your doctor on this.
Yeah, okay. I am male and I get terrible dandruff, and it's really annoying. What do you recommend, Patrick? It's always over my clothes.
Okay, let's focus on 2 points here. A lot of people, when they say dandruff is a very, very severe form, and I find 8 times out of 10 that it actually isn't dandruff, that it's dry scalp. So when you're looking at your clothes, what your scalp is telling you is it's like a moisturiser. And what you need to do is use something that is going to put that moisture balance back into your scalp. Your scalp is basically saying, sorry, I'm too dry. Can you please put something in that's going to connect and reduce the dryness and falling on the clothes? If it is dandruff, then you are looking at something that is a little bit more intense. And there, on the market there recently, I've noticed that a lot of products applying of dandruff treatments. Of you can apply this, and what happens, it actually cleans the scalp and it gives it a whole new freshness again. It doesn't work permanently for long term, but it can last you for about 8 weeks, which I find is very, very good.
Okay, we're going to go to Susan, who's got an issue with her scalp as well. Hi, Susan.
Yes, not actually me. I'm inquiring for someone else.
Okay.
It's just psoriasis of the scalp, using Dovabet gel, finding that very gluey, you know, when you're trying to wash it out the day after. I've even come now to use bio oil and stuff like that just to soften the scalp, and I've tried a lot of things. I'm just wondering if you had any suggestions.
I would go more inclined, I'd be more inclined to go with seeing people using on the second option where you're using the oils, which is softening it more. Because with the gel products, what actually happens is they can be over heavy, and they're actually, what they're doing is they're grabbing on, and they're not actually doing anything. So they're not allowing the product to actually develop, whereas I find with the more lighter ones that you're seeing a better result. Again, it gets back to with the psoriasis, it's a medical condition, and you are looking at something medicated there to use. I'm sorry if I'm not been a wee bit more helpful with you there, but
I know, it just seems to be ongoing every few days. It just, but anyway, just wanted your opinion.
But with that, just touching on what you are using, from experience and seeing people using different ranges of products, the oil, I would say using the oil ones and move away from the gel ones. I'm not a fan of them.
Bio oil would be lighter than using an ordinary, like, heavier oil, so...
Oh, yes.
Maybe, and, you know, I don't know, maybe.
What it's doing is it's breaking it down more, and it's helping it release better for you.
Mm-hmm.
And it's allowing it to breathe, which means that you're getting more longevity out of it. Just touching on what you're saying there also, there is a treatment, again, a cleansing treatment for psoriasis that you can apply. And a number of salons are doing it now at the minute. If you go to your hairdresser, they should be able to find out for you exactly what way it works. And again, it goes on, it stays on for about half an hour, and it really penetrates in and breaks it down and can clean it out for, I think it gives about 4 weeks.
Right.
So if you wanted to look at that there.
Thank you.
And what we'll do, Susan, I'll get Patrick to give you a wee call and he can give you the name of the product.
Yes.
Off the air. Is that all right?
Thank you.
Okay,
I'm not allowed
to say it on air, I'm sorry.
Yeah.
Okay.
I know. Thank you, bye-bye.
Okay, Susan, bye. My 5-year-old daughter has very curly hair and I hate to use product on it. Any advice? Again, it's tangling, I think.
Yeah, it's tangling, and it also sounds as if you just feel it's not dressed enough. But the issue, when you're saying, I do not want to use product on the hair, it sounds to me, I've used product in the past, I've had a bad experience and I don't like what it does. So don't let that put you off, because with naturally curly hair, you do need something, and you can use something that you don't even know that it's in the hair, but what it does is it just gives you that slightly of control on the hair. With naturally curly hair, where young girls are out and about, people feel that their hair looks too wild, and something that is not heavy, you don't know it's in the hair, and it will tame it and control it for you, because natural curly hair is beautiful, it doesn't need anything to weigh it down. So all you need to do is enhance it rather than try and oppress it.
Is there a scissor technique to thin thick hair rather than thinning scissors or a razor?
Yeah, there is certainly. There is deep cutting, there is 4-point cutting, and it's actually touching on something, and what you're actually saying is your hair's heavy, you're getting your hair thinned out, they're using thinning scissors, but you don't actually like what it does because it kills your style. And this is something which crops up quite a lot. So by point cutting, deep cutting, 4-point cutting, you can reduce bulk from the hair without going in and using thinning scissors. Thinning scissors are to be used in certain areas for specific things. They're not primarily to be used overly. And even if your hairdresser uses them, even have a conversation with them and say, look, I want you to reduce the amount of use of them by 50%. And what happens is that people feel that it reduces the bulk, but they've lost the style. But yes, there is loads of other techniques that can be reduced, that can be used to reduce bulk in the hair.
How can I return to my natural hair colour? I've been having blonde highlights for years. So what do you do? Just stop having highlights or what?
Well, it depends. The natural hair colour. I'm just.
If you've gone grey, like, you're not going to go back to your natural colour if it was brown, for instance.
We'll take it in 2 points.
Yeah.
Is that sometimes when people put blonde in their hair, they travel on a journey of where they reach, and suddenly they get up in the morning and they look in the mirror and they go, oh my God, I'm too blonde. And when they say, I want to go back to my natural colour, what they're actually saying is, I want to be more natural looking. So, by all means, yes, you can move back and you can still keep some highlights, because sometimes when people move back completely, it actually freaks them out more as well. So do it naturally and do it gradually. Have your consultation. I would suggest that you move back about 50%. That's in one point where you want to stay with a natural, deeper tone. If it's a case of what you're saying is, I've been using blonde highlights, underneath my hair has become grey as I've matured, and you want to go to a more natural grey, then this is a lot more simplified. You let it grow out, add in some highlights, and it creates a transition, which is becoming quite popular with ladies at the minute.
This is Patrick Gulday, and I have spots even on my scalp with whiteheads. Tried all different types of shampoo, nothing seems to work, and it's getting very itchy. I would have greasy roots.
I think it's coming from the oily skin. What's happening is the oil is oppressing, it's stopping your scalp from breathing, and it's creating these small pimples. Again, you need something quite deep that's going to remove that oil and will allow the scalp to breathe. The scalp is not getting breathing here and having air at it.
Okay, well, there's somebody who wants me to say a big thank you to you, Patrick. It's a person who had great help from you when his wife had cancer. Mm-hmm. And basically, you must have arranged for a hair piece here. Mm-hmm. And it was the style of her own hair, and it wasn't obvious at all. Not very many people knew it wasn't real, and I just wanted to thank you. So there you are.
It's a pleasure. Thank you.
I know it's a big area, isn't it, mm-hmm. for you and hairdressers to look after people who are going through chemo or alopecia or whatever, and try and get hair that matches what they had. Mm-hmm. It's easier to do than it used to be. No, I'm not saying it's easy, but one time it was very obvious. A wig was very obvious, yeah. But now not so.
Not now. They really have, you know, the market out there at the minute has really stood up to the challenge of the last 15 years with hair pieces for people, because, you know, this is so important. People going through treatment, this is their outfit that they have on them every day. Yeah. And when they look in the mirror, it's the first piece that they see. Some people don't bother, but for people that feel more comfortable with a hairpiece, this is so important. And, you know, thank you very much for that. There's one thing about hairpieces is it certainly makes you a more humbler person when you're working with people.
Yeah, because you're dealing with people who are really going through challenging problems as well. Now, I'm sure you've been asked this one before. I would love my hair to grow faster. I mean, if people think, well, if you eat better or whatever, is there anything you can do?
I wish I had that answer, but that answer I would be about to retire. Healthy balanced diet, and everybody has a...
Maybe look at it the other way. I suppose there's another way of looking at that question. How do you... I mean, people who perhaps their hair is damaged because they're not eating properly or whatever. Mm-hmm. The other way around, I don't know if it makes your hair grow faster, but you can not do things that can lead you having problems with your hair, I presume.
Yeah, there's no doubt about it. just reversing what you're saying, but I don't actually have anything that I can say that can make it grow faster. But, you know, touching on
April 1st, we might have.
Sean is coming from, you know, as well, is the point that, you know, if we are not eating healthy, if we are putting ourselves under stress, then this has a big impact on how our hair grows.
And stress can cause
hair loss.
Hair loss. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So, you know, it has a massive impact. So slow down if this is maybe the point that you're coming from, and eat healthy, and your natural growth pattern will happen. If it is anything else that's a wee bit more personal and you'd like to discuss it, then you can call me and I'll speak to you in a one-to-one.
Thank you very much.
Sean, thank you very much.
Patrick Gulday, it's just turned 5 to 1, and that's where we'll say ta-ta for today. Thank you very much for your company on my last Monday, and thanks to our producer today, who was Kira Johnson, assisted by Caroline Orr. See you tomorrow at 10. Slán agus banacht. Bye.